This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Bruce Nash. Dr. Nash is the Chief Physician Executive of Blue Cross Blue Shield Massachusetts. We're going to talk about his career journey, how he ended up there, what he does, and more, and some of the top priorities today. Dr. Nash, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Again, my role is Chief Physician Executive at Blue Cross Blue Shield Massachusetts. Blue Cross Blue Shield Massachusetts is one of the nation's leading not-for-profit health plans with 2.8 million members. I've served in that type of capacity for most of my career. I'm a family physician by training, but soon after coming out of residency, entered into management roles with greater responsibilities, and have been in the chief medical officer, physician executive type of role in a health plan for 25 years, although I spent 5 years as a stint for the president of my local hospital and have done some consulting as well.
What a fascinating career. At some point, you went back to get an MBA. Talk to us about that. How did that inform your judgments? Was it helpful to your long-term career? Why did you choose to do so? Just a couple thoughts on that. It's a big move to be a great physician leader, plus choose to do an MBA. I know a handful of other great leading physicians that have done the same thing. Talk a little bit about that choice and what that was like.
Yeah, I think that it's probably more common today than it was when I was coming up through training, certainly. As I progressed in my career, I think I was actually 50 years old when I decided that it would be appropriate to sort of get that additional education as well as degree. I returned back to my training roots as a Blue Devil, went back to Duke's Fuqua School of Business, and I filled in some gaps in regard to some of the areas, particularly in finance, strategy, that perhaps I just hadn't been able to develop those skills and knowledge, just from on-the-job training, so to speak. Today many young physicians will have combined types of MD or MBA programs, but I generally advise people, who are in the circumstance to actually get in the workforce a bit and work through, going into an executive program after you have some experience. You find that the learning is much more applicable to the work you do and you derive more from it, I feel.
What was it like going back to school? Did you do it part-time in the executive program or full-time? What was that like going back?
Yeah, so that was, again, for me, it was sort of intellectual junk food. I always enjoyed being a student, but I stepped out to actually have a career. But returning to the classroom as an executive kind of MBA program, whereas I live in Vermont and I would basically fly down to Durham, North Carolina, for alternate weekends and this time with people from diverse backgrounds. We had a health sector management kind of piece of it as well. That was just health sector people, but otherwise it was a broad-based type of MBA program. And admittedly, I always tell myself I was the second oldest person in the class, but it was also stimulating to be around sort of the younger bright minds as well.
Yeah, I'm going to take you back to Duke in a moment. I want to ask you first about population health and some of your thoughts on what that looks like today. You're a huge payer. What does population health look like for a huge payer? And how does a big payer impact it, or do they?
Well, I, as a family physician, I'd like to sort of start there because basically family physicians are trained as population health for your practice. You're entrusted with the care of some 2,000, 2,500 people, and you're looking at providing all the preventive services and coaching and advisory types of things for them to lead happy, healthy, productive lifestyles. Moving into a health plan role, one of the desirable things for me was that I felt like I was now basically having a larger practice. So when I was a smaller health plan of 500,000 people, that was the size of my practice, and now I have a 2.8 million member practice. But so health plans were sort of first in the population management space, if you will. Then there, the whole disease management sort of process came into play in the marketplace, and it was outsourced a good bit. But then about 15 years or so ago, there was a big move towards value-based care. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts was a leader in that, providing contracts to provide financial alignment between the delivery system and the payer, where now the provider is actually directly accountable for the cost of care as well as the quality. And that led to the creation of, sort of population management infrastructures where you have, consolidation of physicians into large systems and now a whole administrative layer to assure that the patients in that population got all of their appropriate health screening, immunizations, and chronic disease management. So I think that's where we sit today. You know, it's part of an evolution and continues to evolve, and I think that the use of technology will be beneficial to get better outcomes in the future.
Thank you. And Dr. Nash, as chief physician executives of one of the biggest plans in the country, what do you view as your top three priorities this year? I mean, obviously, it's been a sidelined year with COVID-19 and everything else. But how do you look at your top three priorities or top three goals? How do you look at that?
Well, the pandemic has certainly put, you know, sort of a magnifying glass on the sort of weaknesses in the American healthcare system. And, you know, as a leader of a health plan, affordability is still the biggest challenge. We have great, you know, care in this country, very technologically based, but it's expensive, and it's becoming more expensive, and arguably it's not affordable today. You know, some of the new things coming out relevant to precision medicine, where we have these wonderful therapies to cure conditions would formerly, you know, sort of, you know, be lethal to young infants, are, you know, coming out in the market with price tags of over $2 million. And over the next 5 years, there are dozens of such innovations. And the question is how does the already stretched family who's trying to, you know, keep up with healthcare expenses afford that? And how do we as a country deliver uniform care to our population? So I'd say affordability is the biggest challenge. The second piece I have great concern about is the disparities of care that, you know, the pandemic has unveiled. We certainly know that people of color have taken a hit much harder than other subsets of individuals, but that's not news to us. We know, we've known for years that, you know, there's marked difference outcomes in regard to, you know, chronic disease status of many different parts of the population. But we're now starting to see a lot more energy around how do we focus and understand that and provide services and better access, particularly to people of color. And then the last piece is more futuristic. I alluded to it in regard to, you know, how technology may influence, you know, better care, better engagement of, you know, the patient population or citizens of the country in general to take care of better health themselves. And, you know, how do they interface with a newly reformed delivery system that the pandemic has caused a marked shift to telehealth? And I think that, you know, with the dependence we all have on our cell phones and technology in that regard, it just seems that there's going to be sort of a whole shift in care delivery, such that the idea of what I practiced, you know, over decades in New England, of the only means of dealing with the patient were sort of face-to-face in my office, plus an occasional home visit. Now we're talking about things where we can have sort of, you know, more continuous interface with our patient populations. But the delivery system hasn't quite figured that out yet. So that's part of, I think, the role of the health plan to try to, you know, support that innovation to improve, you know, outcomes for patients.
Certainly. And I guess taking you to a less serious question, you're a Duke graduate. Duke is famously known for not its academics, not its great campus, not its great school, but its magnificent basketball program and Coach K. And I say that facetiously, obviously, because it's also a magnificent school. So what are your thoughts about Duke versus UNC, you know, the Tar Heels versus the Blue Devils? What's a better program, Dean Smith versus Coach K?
Yeah, actually, Coach K came and took over the reins of Duke just as I was finishing residency, so that's in 1980. So I saw him earlier in his career as he was coming from Bobby Knight. And I, even at that point, you know, was distinguished himself as an outstanding coach. You know, he, being sort of from the Duke system, if you will, you know, I've always been a Blue Devil at heart. And I've sort of followed along as he's not only exerted his leadership on the basketball court, but also, you know, sort of in business. And his ability to build teams has been sort of instructive for me. And that's something I've taken pride in regard to as an executive, being able to hire the right people and getting them to work collaboratively together and getting them to know each other as people and act as a family. And all these things are the way Coach K builds his basketball team. So no offense to Carolina fans, but I'll go with Coach K.
God bless. I know the people that are Duke fans are rabid Duke fans and so forth, so you haven't let us down there in that regard. Dr. Nash, it's great to visit with you. Any thoughts on the future, sort of like Medicare for all, any of these issues, any sense of where this is going, or is that impossible for you to talk on being a Blue Cross guy? And I'm just curious, and you don't have to answer. We're free to edit this out if you're not comfortable answering.
Well, you know, as I said, the challenge of affordability is in front of us. And the question is given our unique mixture of governmental payer and private payer in this country, is there a way we'll figure out how to finance this in a manner that provides uniform care and access to all these new developments that hasn't been done elsewhere? So that's the open question. You know, whether it's specifically Medicare for all, the question is that decades from now, will everything devolve into, you know, something that's more of a single payer, whether it's run by the government or contracted from the government? And then, you know, the consequences, will that be a uniform kind of set of benefits, or will it be what we see a lot of other places in the world, where there's sort of a separate higher level of benefits for those who can afford to buy supplemental private insurance on top of that? Obviously, that's going to take quite a while for those questions to be answered. But that's what's the challenge I think we have our current insurance system in the country.
No, thank you. It does seem that probably at some point, even with universal health care of some sort, you'll have different levels of care available based on people that could still buy the supplement privately. And also, you still have great access problems if you don't have enough doctors, enough providers, enough technology, enough all these things to provide enough access and providers, even if you have, quote-unquote, financial coverage at a lower cost. Dr. Nash, great pleasure visiting with you. Thank you very much for indulging us on a variety of subjects. Just a pleasure, and what a great career. Thank you very much.
Enjoy it. Thanks. Have a good day. Take care.